The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the only complete planning platform natively integrated with Microsoft 365. With Vena, your finance and operations team can maximize your productivity and efficiency to deliver data and insights to your whole business faster. Vena lets your team use the Microsoft apps they already know and love, like Excel and PowerPoint, while giving your business the power of scale through a robust centralized database and AI capabilities. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Vena. In this episode, we're discussing a topic that can make or break your finance function, ERP migration. From evaluating your current systems, to planning for data integrity and ensuring post-migration success, today's conversation is your comprehensive guide to navigating one of the most complex and critical transitions in modern finance. We'll cover common pitfalls, planning for user adoption, and maximizing the long-term ROI of your ERP investment. Joining me is Scott Jorgens, Director of Marketing and Strategic Partnerships at Endeavor Solutions. Scott is a seasoned leader with over 25 years of experience. He brings a fresh perspective on how finance, IT, and operational teams can align for an ERP migration that actually delivers results. Whether you're in the early planning stages or mid-implementation, this conversation is packed with actionable takeaways. Let's get into it. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
Tell us a bit about your journey and what brought you to Endeavor Solutions.
Starting off in finance, my dad was an accountant, did co-op back in business school and finance departments. So finance has been sort of a big part of my life. And moved from finance into a sales position. So selling fixed asset software of all things.
That's quite a move.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Did that for a number of years, process automation, bringing all the pieces together, selling consulting services. And at one point I'm like, I want to stop getting in sales. I want to be the thinker. So got into consulting work, did process analysis, document management, those types of things. And then actually went to IBM for a while and was in a sales role in IBM. So they wanted someone who was a consultant plus thinking at the same time. Did that for a while and then had two boys, started my own business in marketing. So I was bringing thought leadership down into marketing. And then the last 10 years I've been at Endeavor. So joined the company, wanted to be part of a winning team and really make an impact. And we've done a lot of growth in the ERP space and CRM, working with Microsoft Business Applications.
Excellent. Let's talk a bit about ERP migration. When an organization starts thinking about potentially considering an ERP migration, what are some of the first considerations that they should be making?
It's quite human. It's what pain am I trying to avoid or what pleasure am I trying to get towards? The pain is the system isn't working. We have too many workarounds. Really taking a look back at how could we survive the day, the week, the month, getting the people to do, you know, honest day's work and pushing through the system. And then the positive side is what could you be doing better? What would an ideal system look like? And are you missing out? So it's always sort of that fear of missing out, looking towards, can we automate more processes? Can we avoid more manual processes? Are there better analytics? And then sometimes there's like trigger of, you know, the organization just recovered from a competitive issue, or there's a new supply chain being set up, new economic issues. So some of those are sort of triggers moving into, you know, why they'd want to change ERP systems.
What are those most common triggers that start to become red flags that it's time to think about a new system?
There are probably two key ones. One would be age. So a lot of clients are on their same ERP system for 10 or 20 years, and it's getting old. So it was designed maybe back in the 90s, early 2000s. You know, at the time when it was implemented, business processes may have been different. The company may be growing and changed a number of reporting requirements, best practices. So having an older system, sometimes it became outdated in terms of the implementation. And so they look at, well, what's going to take to renovate my system and build into today's modern age? And so sometimes just that delta and change is too much. So they want to replace the whole system altogether. There's a lot of new cloud-based technology. So that is changing some of the dynamic. There's greater automation. There's AI being put in. So there's a lot of new bells and whistles that aren't just appealing because they sound cool. They actually fundamentally get better analytics, automate more processes. When it comes to reporting, you have to capture all the data. And so there's sort of a bureaucratic side of a lot of people doing data entry, and how can we reduce that data entry to capture that much more data, make use of it? And so the newer systems help with that. One of the key triggers within the Microsoft world is Microsoft Dynamics GP, which was, you know, it's almost a legacy system now. Dynamics GP, Microsoft announced just under a year ago that it's going to be end of life in 2029. So here's a system, everyone loves it, it's working great, but the manufacturer is saying, you know, it's going to be end of life. So it's going to be harder to get reports, harder for repairs, some security concerns if there's patches that are no longer being released. So we now have quite a number of clients calling us within our client base as well as others going, hey, this system's end of life in 4 to 5 years. What's it like to use afterwards? Should it be migrating now? Should it be migrating later? And we're expecting quite a wave. So for some, it's get in line. And then that's a scary aspect of, okay, we need to start making some plans to get things in motion sooner rather than later.
And are you seeing the pace of that pick up? I was thinking to myself, well, what is the common time frame that you should reconsider what else is out there in the market, however many years that was? But along with that, is that accelerating with the pace of change that's going on in the market? So how would you think about that? You know, how long to wait before you go out and look at the market to see if you're missing functionality?
Yeah, definitely the pace is accelerating, and there's a lot of great tools out there. With the advent of the cloud, we're really finding a lot of really expensive and complicated enterprise software is coming down into the mid-market because it's accessible through a subscription. So you're getting a lot of innovation that's coming from across the globe into systems that are a little bit easier to access. And that accessibility into the system of, okay, I can afford it, it's the right size, it's not too complex, they've automated some processes, really helps serve that competitive standpoint within any organization, whether nonprofit or for profit. You're always competing for, I need top talent, I need to deliver to my stakeholders. And being able to pull all that off together, sometimes the new systems really do make a difference.
And so what would be the orders of magnitude of how much it's accelerating, you know, just in roughly, if it used to be however many years of change, what does that look like now? Just so we know how much that's changed.
It's a tough one because we have so many clients that are still on the old system. So they've been on for 10 years.
They have.
So
okay.
To see that change, like they're not flipping every 5 years. It's still in sort of that 7 to 10 to 15 year standpoint because a lot of it takes a year to implement and then you're sustaining. ERP really is a journey. So you should be always sort of the sense of continuous improvement, getting more out of the system. Any businesses are evolving at the same time. Any given organization, they have challenges in a 10-year period. They've either grown or they've contracted. There's new competitive pressures. There's new economic pressures. So a lot of things back and forth. Those that have inventory and supply chain, manufacturing, those processes are also changing all within a 10-year period. So, you know, the acceleration to the cloud, definitely the pandemic pushed a lot of that forward because people are like, well, I want to work from home. I want to need a hybrid. I need to access stuff remotely. I think security is a big push as well. For systems that were designed back in the 90s, they didn't have the same security threats. It was often, you know, a guy or gal in their basement, you know, three people causing mischief. And now the security threats are large global organizations that have full call centers trying to hack in, extort data, ransomware, a lot of, you know, scary stuff. and everyone's becoming a target. So moving into newer software does help to close some of those gaps.
Yeah, it's interesting. If I think back, you know, several years, data wasn't seen as valuable as now it is. And so any company that has data on its customers, employees, whatever it is, that it's all subject.
It's a lot more fluid.
Yeah.
And back in the day, it was keep people out of the building. Yeah, like you could put, you can put your password on a sticky note on the computer and go, okay, this is secure. Now it's okay, that gets leaked. It can be anywhere in the world because it's been exposed. Like it's not just your network. It's now, you know, if you're accessing stuff remotely over the internet or through VPNs, it's easier for larger remote organizations or sometimes local, but to access it unseen.
Well, and it's interesting when you talk about the timeline of how long people are keeping these systems. I tend to think of the ERP as this bolder foundational system that then you build a lot of things around it when you think of your tech stack, because you want it talking to so many systems and really being a source of truth of a lot of your master file data, which is probably why once we have it, we want it to work and we want to keep it. How do you think companies should go about assessing the limitations of their system and thinking about what those objectives might be for a new ERP migration?
There's so many different parts on that. It comes down to sort of the current state versus future state. So where do you want to be? And if you don't have that vision or knowledge, then get outside help. You know, watch podcasts such as this, industry associations. Typically, they'll have a ERP implementation or support partner. Do assessments. Like we do assessments for our clients, for new clients, existing clients, an annual health check. What do you have now? And almost look at a maturity matrix. What are big organizations doing? What are other organizations looking at? And there's a lot of sort of key topics around better reporting, AP automation, accounts receivable automation, a lot of little pieces that move along. And then there's a new AI. So AI is really cool because it's automating additional processes, but also making some of the pieces just work better. Like bank rec. Bank rec's been around forever. When it has to do a bank reconciliation, there's third-party tools that show the two columns of what you're trying to match with invoices in terms of the bank records. And now AI is starting to take some of that human element and best guessing, you know, and a best guess with a 99% accuracy, that's a pretty good guess.
Yeah. Are the humans that accurate?
Sometimes, sometimes not. And that also brings into sort of, you know, data quality. It's a double-edged sword. Sometimes AI is going to help with that. Other times it's going to create a whole bunch of garbage.
When people are looking at planning for their ERP migration, what are some of the most critical things that often get overlooked in coming up with that plan?
The effort, and really it's setting expectations. So there's a variety of different approaches when it comes to putting in a new ERP. There's some that are sort of small fixed price. Some are large, but still trying to sort of fixed price, fixed scope. We know exactly what you need in your industry. Our approach is very much like a custom home builder. Let's find out what is your secret sauce. What makes you tick as a unique organization? What are you really good at? Maybe it's key individuals, a key supply chain, and really embrace that. And what is the essence of those aspects that they're creating? So I asked some of the consultants, in preparation for today, you know, what should people look for? What goes wrong? What causes delays? One of the key ones was chart of accounts. Of just the chart of accounts is so much of that integral nature and impacts reporting. And if we look at the reporting and dashboards, how should we be capturing different information? How are we going to slice and dice our organization from multiple entities, multiple currencies, multiple business units? How do those all come together? So that's really like something that's overlooked, is to sort of that effort to put those pieces together. And that does cause delays. We've looked internally going, how can we get more projects done per year? We have a lot of clients that want to migrate ERP systems. And so the chart of accounts was a key one. Another aspect is just looking at the processes and process automation. Moving to an ERP, you don't necessarily want to just take all the old processes and put them into the new ERP. Now's the time to take that strategic approach of why are we doing things a certain way? If it's been done that way for 10 years, is it the best way, or is it because the individual that was doing it for 10 years, that was their personal preference? And can we take a 7-step process and make it into a 5-step process? Or should a 5-step process be an 8-step process? There's a lot of ways to really do that process reengineering so that you're not just moving the old into the new. It's transitioning, and you know, they use the word digital transformation. Sounds like a buzzword, but it really is a transformation. If you can do stuff properly, the outputs are, you know, better reporting, better ability to make decisions based on data, better analysis. There's a lot of great financial components where finance is leading the rest of your organization. Sometimes it's a kind of like a supply and demand. Finance has the supply. I know analytics. I can do KPIs. I can bring all the stuff to you. And then there's also the demand of all the individual business unit owners. Do they have the financial acumen to be asking, hey, I want these reports. I want these analytics. You know, if I'm running supply chain, can I have some supply chain performance metrics? Sure. Sounds great. Yes, you can. Are you capturing any supply chain information? Do you have a vendor scorecard? Where is that in the system? Do we need to create a new app? Those types of things where it's an iterative approach to bring. And then I guess to sort of to pull that together is the resistance to change. So for organizations, don't underestimate the resistance to change. And it takes a lot of effort to not only the change management, but just getting people involved and excited.
Well, it's interesting because you talk about that change management. I've certainly overlooked that in my past, especially my early ERP implementations. So totally agree. And the communications that go along with why are we doing this? Hearing people out, making sure that everyone that's coming along for the journey feels part of it and has some buy-in, not just this thing's getting imposed.
Yeah, that buy-in is key. Sometimes we have design sessions, not only just to obviously do the system design and gather, how are you doing things now? What do you want? But sometimes is, you know, we know the answer, but we need to ask the question so that there's that buy-in and that involvement, because a lot of times the super users or the key stakeholders that are the subject matter experts within the client's organization are also going to be the change agents. We got to got to inspire them to be, you know, you're delivering some of the training. You're going to be helping some of this internally. We got to go through testing. And then come go live. Now we can sort of take a pause, but you still got your day job all throughout this. Like people, very few clients are backfilling positions when we put in a new ERP. So it's side of desk work. It's evenings and weekends. It does take, you know, obviously leadership and executive help. Hey guys, let's not throw on a few extra projects during this same time. Let's lighten it up a little bit. And taking some of those, you know, sort of the executive approvals. Let's not kill our team.
It does take effort, and it's easy to underestimate how much effort that work is going to take. You talked a bit about the processes and really, do we need to keep doing things the way we've always done them? I often find this is a great opportunity to find out what is best practice that the company you're buying from or the consultant that's helping you to implement, what are they seeing? Because they get this opportunity to see across many companies and what they're doing. And I think it's at least a chance to reflect on, hey, why are the majority doing it this way? And why is that not as good as the way that I'm doing it? Because sometimes you find out you've customized or created these awkward, weird processes or things that are just for you that you really don't need to be doing them that way.
Exactly the case. And yeah, leveraging like consulting firms such as Endeavor, we span across the whole industry. Mm-hmm. We have internal meetings. We do internal continuous improvement learning sessions on what went well, what didn't go well on different clients. And, you know, I was asking back to some of the project team, we rescue 1 to 3 clients a month.
Oh, wow.
Of they've outgrown their partner, they're looking to change partners, grass is greener aside, or they just finished an implementation, wasn't with us, and they're missing some expectations, user adoption or a technical issue or other. So we pull in, okay, what should we try to avoid? What did others cause issues with? How can we avoid some of those same things? Because it really is, you know, empathetically trying to help customers get the most out of their business. And these systems are complex tools that, when done right, can really help those customers take advantage of that secret sauce and make their lives easier and better.
And what is the one most common thing that is done wrong that requires the save to happen?
It's either the change management where the users, it was kind of their fault. And it could be that the design wasn't right. So the design either wasn't right because the consultant wasn't the right fit, or the individual supplied by the client wasn't the right fit. And so you get halfway through a project, and say, oh, wait, I also need these four extra reports and I also need the process to work this way. And you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, that wasn't discussed 1 or 2 months ago. And that's where it comes either into rework or put the blinders on. Okay, that's going to be a phase two. And so what happens is there are some approaches look for a thing called MVP. Now, it's not most valuable player. That's minimal viable product, which is one size fits most or one size fits none, in my opinion. And so we've talked internally about it. Hey, should we do this? We have competitors doing it. And all the feedback from our consultants is no, it puts everything at too much risk to start too small. All the business users have needs. Finance has needs. There's a threshold where if you miss everyone's needs, there's just a lot of revolt.
Makes sense. How do you think about the stakeholders in an ERP migration and the roles that they play across, say, finance, operations, IT? What is best practice for how they should be working together?
Collaborative, cross-functional approach is definitely key. If you think of from an executive such as yourself, the change management and communications, the vision coming down top down of here is why we're making these changes. As I mentioned, you know, side of desk work. So we need to engage and inspire individuals that they're going to be putting their best foot forward. There was actually a fun show I was watching a while ago called Slow Horses. And it was these spies that all got in trouble. And it was basically, you know, the B League and the C League were all pushed off into one corner. And they became the slow horses versus all the A players. If you treat your ERP of, okay, here's all the individuals that are key to my organization, and these are the peripheral staff, let's throw them on the ERP project. That's not going to get the best design. So it really, you know, it takes from a stakeholder perspective, how do we allocate the best resources to make this thing a success? And it's the external resources as well as the internal resources.
And how do most companies, or how do you recommend most companies assess the success of their ERP migration? Are there any key metrics or ROI you're looking for?
Definitely ROI in terms of user adoption, using the system. The newer cloud-based systems have telemetrics. How many times are people logging in? How many times are they doing transactions? What's the accuracy? If you start looking at executive dashboards, are we getting the data we need and do we trust it? Because if you don't trust the data and you don't trust the metrics, then it's just noise and people aren't actually making decisions on good to great. They're just, oh yeah, it's noise there. I'm just going on with my day. So when you have the adoption levels, that's probably the best metric. And interesting after the fact is this sort of like post go live, how often are people calling the help desk? And it's kind of a hidden metric because if they call too much, then maybe there's a training issue or something wrong with UAT or something's wrong with the system. But if they're calling too little, they're potentially not trying hard enough. They're not asking that question. It's not coming from a point of curious, going, how can I, like, they're not taking that journey of right. The continuous improvement.
Okay, so a company has decided it's time for a new ERP. They're working on selecting. Let's talk about data readiness. What does that need to look like?
Data readiness, at the easiest part of serve, is the data clean? Do you have the right information in the right fields? So a classic example is you have a vendor list, vendor profile for each one of your vendors. They have an email. If there's a phone number in the field where there's supposed to be an email address, so think of it like L Street, you have rows and columns. So right here, there's supposed to be an email address. The system is designed to be creating some extra automation. So email comes in from that vendor, it has an invoice attached. The system actually reads the email address and goes, okay, I think it's this vendor. I think I can pre-populate some things. I can even take out the invoice and start reading it. So there's a lot of cool things where the system is making lives easier and automating processes, basically get do more per day. Mm-hmm. Now, if when that email address field is a phone number, then none of that works. So the data cleanliness is really around, you know, consistency of data. Because if you can have consistent, repeatable processes, then the system can start following these consistent, you can automate them when they're consistent and repeatable. You know, example is Ontario. If I want to run a report by the clients that are in the province of Ontario, is it O-N? Is it O-N-T? Or is it O-N-T? You know, are you spelling Ontario all fully? Is there a typo in there? So that's sort of like clean data.
Yeah.
Beyond that, it gets into more complex aspects of old ERP or even modern ERP. Sometimes there's different status. So what is a work in progress, or work in process for a manufacturing company? It doesn't actually say WIP. It could just be two. Two means work in process. Level one is the order was placed. Level two is work in process. Level three is it shipped. So you just got a bunch of ones, twos, and threes. So is that translation of is it consistent? Then what does that mean for your organization? And those that really, that's the data readiness, is understanding your data, understanding your processes so that you can talk with the implementation design team of, okay, here's how we're going to suck out the data from the old system. Here's some stuff where it's wrong. We need to fix it because we don't want garbage in, garbage out. We want to have the right stuff in the new system.
Yeah. And sometimes I find that's like, you have to slow down to speed up because it seems rigid at the time. Well, I just need to put this somewhere. I'm going to throw this phone number in the email address field because I'm moving quickly, but I'm actually eliminating the ability to do automations and get the system to work for me.
It's that upstream and downstream effects. Individuals that are often doing data entry aren't fully apprised of how small errors or small missteps can change massive things down the road. And that's, again, whether the alignment of the executive team and the stakeholders providing some of those insights. Okay, hey guys, like here's our goal. I got this magical dashboard and I need to trust this data. And there's implications if stuff's not there.
Once this ERP migration is complete,
yes,
what are some of the best ways to make sure that you stabilize the system?
Practice, keep using it, and call the support desk. Most ERP implementations have a follow-on, so past go-live, there's a sustainment period. Some call it hypercare. There's a transition time that we have within our projects where you're calling the consultants that implemented the project as well as the support desk. And then eventually there's sort of a knowledge transfer and then you just call the support desk. And you still get the ongoing mentorship, the training, the what ifs. And it's that point of curiosity of, can we do it a little bit better? Can we do it a little bit different?
I like that. And I do love those hyper, what'd you call it?
Hypercare.
The hypercare models, because it's scary when you're first going live. And I find just even the psychological knowing that people are going to be there to help you, it reduces it, whether you go and use it or not. But when you have an issue, knowing you can get a quick answer, super helpful. Makes it way less frustrating.
Yeah. And it's really changed over the last few years. It used to always be on site. And now a lot of it is done, almost all of it's done remotely. With Microsoft Teams, we're having virtual meetings. We're recording the meetings. And we have AI Copilot doing meeting recaps. So you can take a two-hour meeting and it gives you a page and a half of here's a recap and here's the key takeaways. Here's chapters within our two-hour meeting and it automatically created it. So okay, I want to jump to here. You can have like, hey, I have Jerry was talking. I remember he was talking about something important in the meeting. You can actually go in, okay, Jerry, oh, here's in a color coordinated, here's the four spots where Jerry spoke in that meeting. Click on that. And then you can say, okay, here's what he said. You can go to the transcript. So it's just amazing on how not only are we implementing all the projects remotely using our best talent across the country, but the value and quality of these recordings really help with that sustainment, opportunity to reflect, opportunity to retrain. You have new individuals coming in or the finger pointing down. This report doesn't work. It's not giving me the numbers I wanted. What happened? Well, we got this one, this one. Four meetings ago, there was a design session and you said this was the process. And either you were right or you were wrong or some combination thereof. We can almost inquire on the data rather than blaming things.
Yeah. No, it's amazing what that technology can do. Scott, thank you so much for coming on the show and having this conversation. Now, whenever we have guests on the show, we do have some rapid fire questions that we'd like to ask. So are you ready?
Bring it on.
All right. What is the most common misconception that finance leaders have about ERP migrations?
Ooh, I did ask this question internally. And the answer was not all ERP systems and not all consulting firms are the same. Different capabilities, different fit. It's worth finding the right organization with the right approach and the right system. Some systems do have technical limitations and you need to sort of uncover those to make sure that you're going to be setting yourself with the foundation for the future.
What is one thing that teams should stop doing when planning for an ERP upgrade?
Don't overcomplicate things with procurement. We get this all the time. Everyone does the analysis. Everyone thinks of what they want. And though it's great to do the analysis, it's great to look at the current and the future state. But the challenge is when it turns into a 400-line Excel sheet and says, does it do this? Does it do that? Does it do this? Does it do that? The vendor has to answer those questions. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you asked for it all. Yes, it can do it all. But do you really need all that? Or are you just looking at capability versus what's in scope? So then it just takes hours upon hours and we're busy. So we don't respond to a lot of those inquiries and requests, even when they're existing clients. It takes a lot of time. And you have to question yourself, if the vendor is not busy, is that a concern?
Yeah, right. What is one underrated KPI when it comes to measuring success?
That support desk. You know, not calling too much, but not calling too little. Really keeping track of how often are we asking for help. And that's a gauge on sort of the user adoption and almost their engagement and excitement in the project of the project's done. What's next? What's phase two? What's phase three? What's that journey as you mature over a 3, 5, 10-year period?
And what's one piece of advice that you wish you'd gotten earlier in your career?
Oh, personal one. Keep a focus on the value you add to an organization. So it's not just the tasks you do, but how do your tasks and your contributions, your thoughts contribute to the overall company's success?
What is one book that you recommend most often?
You know what? There's a sales book. It's called Challenger Sale. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's trying to challenge the status quo and bringing substance to every meeting, every discussion. And then it contrasts that to the relationship sales rep who just trying to be the nice guy, the nice gal, or the consultative sale, which is constantly asking questions and it takes forever. The challenger sales really trying to flip it. Rather than working all your way up to the climax, just start with the get to the point and then backfill it with, you know, substance and analysis after the fact. And I think that runs true for a lot of executives, even outside of sales. So, you know, finance leaders approaching boardroom meetings around what challenges should I do to myself and to the others to help the organization be better.
And last one, what is one habit or routine that keeps you sharp under pressure?
I'd say hope for the best, prepare for the worst. Really come prepared for everything. Come with frameworks, do the due diligence, cross your fingers that everything's going to go well, but still become prepared and don't be naive into any situation. And I think that really rings true. And even for today's preparation, I had to go talk to a number of our consultants, talk to project managers, try to get that voice of our consultants to make sure that we're representing our clients' best interest and educating everyone here today.
Excellent. Scott, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time today and enjoyed having you on the show.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more on this topic, sign up for our free newsletter, where each week you'll get a roundup of exclusive resources designed to help you grow your leadership skills and drive strategic transformation across your business. Visit thecfoshowpodcast.com to sign up now. For the CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.